You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. John Ubaldi joins me. He's in Northern California, out of Florida. So welcome back to the motherland.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be back in the motherland. And like we talked earlier, it's a little chilly up here.
Yeah, well, I'm sad to hear that your brother passed away at the age of, would you say, 53?
53, yes.
Wow. And you still don't know. It was a heart attack, but you don't know.
We don't. All they said was a potential heart condition. Until the coroner comes back with his full detail, then we'll get a better gauge when he gets the toxicology and the pathology reports all back.
Was he married? Kids?
No, he wasn't married. No kids. It's just his boss, just right before 4th of July, his boss called me, so he didn't show up for work, and he's like clockwork. So we sent the police over to his house, and then they eventually gained entry into the garage, and that's where they found him. That's like, okay. Oh. So over the weekend, on Friday, we did the funeral over at the National Military Ceremony right outside Sacramento, because he was a Navy veteran. And they did a really good job. I mean, it was impressive. Even those who've never been in the military or came away very impressed about how the military did the ceremony. Patriot Guards, they carried his remains through. We had a procession to his final resting place. They had a nice ceremony. They had the flag. They did a couple volleys. So it was really nice.
What branch of the service?
He was in the Navy.
He was in the Navy. Did they have the supposedly there's a great shortage of buglers to play taps, so they have some kind of electronic device that plays taps?
They had the Patriot Guards and the military escort detail. These guys who are been in the military, one or two of them never been in the military. They just want to make sure those who are veterans get laid to rest properly with the proper military honor. So it was a really good ceremony.
So did they play? Did they play taps?
No, they didn't play taps. No, maybe they did play taps. I'm sorry. Yes, they did. But it was really good. I mean, they gave us the flag. The Navy officer gave me the flag, and then they won the rifle detail, fired three volleys. They gave me the shell casings of that volley. So I'll put together a shadow box for them and everything. But they did a really good job. It was really well done. Not that I want to go to a funeral, but I mean, for those veterans, they did a really nice job, and it was really handled pretty well.
But you have a message throughout all this. Your brother did not have a will.
Yeah, the message I don't care if you're single or married or whatever, get a will or a trust. It may be costly, but, I mean, like my younger brother who's got two kids, they haven't even decided who's going to get the kids if anything happens to both of them. So if that's the case, then it goes into Child Protective Services, and the courts make the decision. So your child is going to be sitting in Child Protective Services, and basically in the foster care system, and I don't think that's a great place for a lot of kids.
Ugh.
So, I mean, it's a necessary thing, but nobody wants to talk about this. It's just like when my parents...
Come on, get over it, man. Hey, newsflash, you're probably going to die.
You are going to die. At some point, you're going to die. Some sooner than others, so you better prepare yourself here because your loved ones paid the price if you didn't prepare.
Right.
Well, we've been in the military. How many times we tell the Marines about your SGOI? Make sure you get this done
and that done.
I remember.
Oh, my God. Pre-deployment. Right, pre-deployment shit, will and powers of attorney, man. The guys, they're going to be here again. Who doesn't have them? Him again? Get his ass down there and get this done.
Well, here's an example. When I was working my civilian job back in Sacramento, they told me about a veteran and a Marine, I think it was a Marine, passed away, and they were like, his family was destitute. And they're like, well, how's that the case? Didn't he have SDI? I mean, didn't he have a life insurance? And I go, let me tell you how it probably worked. He probably put his parents on his SDI thinking, well, they'll take care of my family. Well, not realizing they had something against probably the daughter-in-law. So they kept the money and gave her nothing. And how many times has you as an officer told you to make sure whoever you put is the one person you want to get the money?
Yeah, that's happened more than we
know. Oh, my God.
And so a lot of times they never changed it after they got married to their wife. And the wife and the mom don't get along, and the wife has nothing. It's brutal. Yeah.
Or they give it to a girlfriend, or how many counseling sessions did you have, or we had? It's just dealing with all these issues.
Don't give it to the girlfriend ever. Standing policy. Give it to an uncle. If you hate your parents, give it to somebody in your family. Don't sign your girlfriend's name to that. But to each his own. Any other lessons learned from your brother's funeral?
No, that was it. It's just, hey, be prepared, because if you're not prepared, it's gonna be planned for you.
Yeah. Hey, the Commandant's coming on. Any suggestions for questions that I should ask?
I guess the one question I would ask is, how's the new policy that General Mattis was talking about? He was getting a lot of comments about all the mandatory non-combat related training. And you all, both of us, remember that every January we had to go through this slew of Marine Net classes. And how much is that going to be altered or changed in getting back to what we're supposed to be done as warfighters, is actually training for combat?
Okay.
So I'd be curious to see if that, what policy direction he was giving to the service chiefs.
All the cover your ass classes, right? You got to have smoking cessation. Okay. You got to have suicide prevention. You got to have sexual assault, sexual harassment.
There's hazing. PPI. All the stuff. So
right.
I'd be curious to see what direction they're going to go, what direction he gave the service chiefs to rectify that.
Yeah. Let me tell you, who's going to make any of that go away? They're not. They're going to say, well, this should be contained in this, and so it's therefore it's not going to go away. It's just going to migrate to this. It's the political correct things that you have to sit there and do. You know, you have to go to anti-smoking class. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's amazing that the stuff that it. Now, another question would be interesting to ask the combat. Within the last recent weeks, we've seen airplane crashes, like down, was it Mississippi or Louisiana? Then there was that one crash outside of or off the coast of Australia. How is the Commandant dealing with these aircraft mishaps? Is there going to be a aviation stand down? And to rectify that, what's the policy with
aviation? Aviation stand down in the next 2 weeks. Hey, you know, I guess I had General Milstead on yesterday talking. He said something that I thought was pretty profound. He said, safety is a result of doing things right. Okay? And so, doing things right is a function of leadership.
Correct.
So, that's what you got to get to. And he said, you can do good things in a safety stand down. A lot of people roll their eyes and say, oh, this is just, you know, some other bullshit cover your ass move. So, you know, the Commandant could say, yeah, we had a stand down. And he said, but Milstead said, no. He said, what you have to do is you have to address, you know, the issues that are leadership issues relative to what you do. And so, you know, it has to make sense to people. And so safety is about leadership. And I thought it was a pretty interesting little point that he made. And
I've got it's a good point. I mean, you have to always get back to the basics and see, okay, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? Let's go back and let's look at things. But I'd be curious to also get his take on, you know, you hear recent reports that, you know, certain planes can't fly because of budgetary problems and the like. I'd be interesting to get his take on all that. What is the what is the status of the force today? What could be improved? What needs to be looked at? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And what needs to change to make us more effective and more lethal?
Well, let me tell you, I was talking about this yesterday, I think, maybe Monday, but if we go to blows in Korea, where do we get the aircraft? And this whole notion that this whole lack of funding that the Congress has given the DOD so that, I mean, can we fight two different places at the same time?
Well, that's a good point, because it would task us to go into Korea. But what about in the Middle East? Do you think Iran's just idle?
Who the fuck's going to Korea? You know, the last I looked, F-18s got in the air at about between 25% and 30% of what we have can get in the air. Much of that tied up in Iraq and Afghanistan. Who the hell is going to go to Korea? The guys in Iraq and Afghanistan, they're going to, hey, sorry, boo, hit the pause, we got to go.
Well, it's just like, who are they going to go? But then they would have to definitely stand up, as we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, stand up the reserves again. Are the reserves?
Yeah, but the reserves, their airplanes aren't flying.
But the point I was getting at is that of the reserves reconstituted itself after, you know, 15 years, because the first one, from 01 all the way, what, it's about maybe 2011, reserves were used heavily.
I know, but screw the reserves. Your active component can't get there.
Exactly.
So, I don't...
And that's almost like a replication of when they first went into Korea in 1950. The active forces were depleted. They had to get the reserve just to fill a division to get to Korea.
Joke. You know, it's just more reason why we should abolish political parties in the country, you know, because this ass clownery that goes on in Washington, D.C. is injurious to the nation. Okay. In fact, I saw a memo supposedly attributed to the Secretary of Defense. He admonished the public affairs officers to be careful when speaking about readiness, lest we give somebody the wrong idea. Now, what did that mean? It was very, you know, kind of a cryptic warning, and I think essentially, hey, don't talk about readiness. That's what he was communicating. Why?
Well, I think the cryptic.
Why would you not talk about your readiness if you were ready?
Well, I think that what he was talking about, or at least I can't go into his mind, is not letting our enemies know that the military, and they're not dumb.
They
see the news report.
Right.
But that's the... But see, I think the point is, it's well taken, is for too long we've got this this chasm between those who serve and those who haven't. Even this is on both sides of the public eye. They don't have any idea what military service is. When they talk about conflict in Korea, most America is like, oh, it's not my kid.
Yeah, but
we've been doing this for 15 years, and how many people have a son or daughter serving in their country?
I know, but still, when you're elected, you ought to be at least savvy enough to know that we ought to at least be able to use the equipment that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fairly low bar to get over, that, you know what, 25% of the Marine Corps' fighter assets can get in the sky. That's probably not a good thing. And now,
no, that is definitely not a good thing.
And now we're dancing around in two different countries. And how would we do that? Who goes? What aircraft can get in the air? So Interesting.
But look at the debate we're having. We're potentially having maybe have a conflict in Korea. We're potentially got conflicts in Syria, Iraq, potentially with Iran. The president is still debating what his Afghan strategy is going to be. And what's the number one issue that's on the minds of most people? Transgender?
No, nobody cares. Nobody cares about that.
Well, but I mean, if you look at the discussions, you follow this as well as I do. I get a lot of the news feeds, and that's pretty much what the top concern is for most people. But I know we've had this conversation on a previous show, but I mean, we're losing sight. And then the defense budget, there alone is some of the problem. I remember General Odin Arrow was on Capitol Hill, and he was fighting against more additional funding for upgrading the tank corps. He's like, we don't need this. And he was given $2.8 billion that had to go to that could be used for something else. And I know General Mattis is just, like, scratching his head. It's like, dear God, why are we focusing over here when we should be focusing over here?
No, he had a great quote recently when he was testifying, last month when he testified before, I think, the Senate Armed Service Budget Committee. It might have been the Senate and the House Armed Service Committees convening jointly to do budget stuff. He said there's been no enemy on the planet that has done the damage to the Department of Defense that sequestration has done. And so that's certainly problematic. I have a question, and maybe you know the answer to this, because you live in Florida, and I've heard that there's a lot of transgender people in Florida. So you may know the answer to this, you may not. If you're post-op transgender and you have to, and you're on hormone therapy, right?
Okay.
Do you know, could they give you a jar of pills? These are your hormones, go to the field for a year? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know. I don't know if Florida has more transgender than anybody anywhere else. I don't know. I don't know how all that
I just made
works.
I just made that up, the Florida piece of it.
But I mean, I don't know how that all works. I mean, what's the process?
Right. Well, no, this is Mac, okay? And I'm a reasonable man, okay? You can't be a transgender on active duty in the military. We should screen for it. So you come into the recruiting office, and I say, Ubaldo, you want to join the Marine Corps? You say yes. I say, do you know that while you're on active duty, you can't switch gender? Are you cool with your gender? And you say, yes, I have no intention of it. Okay, Ubaldo, you can sign up. Okay, so we screen for it. Not because we care if you're transgender or not, because we don't. There's no editorial comment. But when you begin that process of when you put your hand up and say, I want to be trans, I want to be a girl, then you're not full up round, you're not a full up round interplaceable, interchangeable widget. And that's what we need in our organization to go fight wars. So we have to put you on the side. Well, what everybody knows is that we don't put you on the side for very long before we med board you and get you out of the Marine Corps.
Correct.
All right. We med board people for bad ankles, bad knees, bad brains, allergies, all kinds of different shit. You're out of the Marine Corps. If you're not an interchangeable widget, you're out. So when you tell me I've got to be a non-interchangeable widget for between probably 5 and 15 years, yeah, we can't use you. Sorry. Okay, and so we don't do that. So that's why we can't do it. We don't care if you want to change sexes. Now, you've changed sexes at the age of, let's say, by the age of 25, you're post-op complete, you're full-up brown man or woman. From 25 to 30, you live, and you don't have any depression, you're a happy person, yada, yada, yada. Okay, you with me? Now you want to join the military. And you don't have any issues. Physically, you're fine. Mentally, even though we don't have a mental test, mentally you're fine. And you want on the list. Is there anything that would prohibit you from enlisting? And the only thing that people have questioned to me, because I said I'd let you enlist. If you're Philip Brown and you're post-op, like, I don't care that you switched. Doesn't matter to me. You meet the standard, go. The question was, well, what about their hormone therapy? I said, I don't know about that. So somebody make me smart about hormone therapy, and you can email the program. You could send a text if you care to. You can text the secret text line is 714-661-8107. You could even call the program if you want to call and spout off. And we'll put you on. But that's the one part I don't know about. So I would tell you that just like with insulin and being a diabetic, we can't do diabetics, okay? Because we can't refrigerate that stuff. It's just not what we do. It's too complicated.
Well, but it's also the thing is the military isn't set up for all these special cases, especially when you deploy. You get great medical care if you deploy, and that's a given. But not for these special individuals, like you say, like a diabetic or some of these other problems. We're just not set up for that. That's not what the military was set up for.
Yeah. So, again, so it's not an issue of them being transgender. The issue is being a widget. Okay? Ubaldi, widget. McNamara, widget.
Exactly.
Bring him in. Give him his physicals. Give him all the shots, send him down the supply, give him his shit, and send him over there. He fits on this line. He a widget.
I think the problem is in the greater debate, this goes back to this whole debate on all this stuff. And not just this issue, and many other issues. Everybody's looking at the equality side. They're not looking at what is the mission of the military is to fight and win the nation's wars, meaning whoever the nation decides is the enemy of the United States, our job is to go out and kill them. Plain and simple. But when you start to change that, well, we got to, it's just like the whole females in combat. We're looking at it from an equality standpoint. Well, warfare is not equality.
Yeah, let me ask you that. Let me ask you that. So you were an 0311?
Correct, 0311, 0369, yes. Okay. So I was a bullet stopper just like you.
All right. So now, a female sergeant, you're a sergeant, female sergeant comes in, she passes all the tests to become a grunt, and she comes in. Is it fair to you that she can do 7 pull-ups and max the PFT, and you have to do 22 now to max the PFT?
23.
Is that fair?
That's the question. It's not fair. There's a female sergeant at the gym I go to. She's at the amphibious unit outside of Tampa. And I see her. She's in great shape, but the max that she can do on the pull-ups is about 8 or 9. Well, I have to do 23. I mean, is that fair in combat or fair for the infantry for promotion? No, it's not.
Because, the North Koreans don't give a shit about gender norms.
No.
Right?
No.
And the only thing that works on the battlefield is absolute strength, not relative strength. But relative to you competing with her for promotion, she get promoted ahead of you.
Well, exactly. But the point, there was one article, I think it was a Cutlass, it was 2013. It was in Marine Gazette, and I wish I remember the officer's name. She was a female officer, and she says, when I went to Iraq and Afghanistan, I was in better shape than a lot of the men who went. But then she said, the problem with it, over time, my physicality dropped considerably over the men.
Right.
Because we're not built for upper body strength.
No,
and when you wear a flak jacket and you wear all that gear, and you know as well as I do, ammo is not light.
Ugh. Nobody tells you that. Nobody tells you that. Hey, these plates are heavy. Blah, blah, blah. And then you load up all your ammunition and you throw it on.
Oh my God. Try carrying the 240 ammo in both hands and you got to run that distance.
Right.
Your arms feel like they're scratching the deck, or you got to carry the ammo for the 81s or the 60s. That gets heavy after a while. And over time, you're in combat. Like when they went to Iraq the first time, we all know there's individuals. They didn't get much more than, what, a meal a day for a month and a half. All of them lost weight.
Yeah, no. Testosterone's is a incredible drug that we produce naturally. That in those environments, what do you see? You see guys lose their body fat. You see their shoulders get big, their thighs get big, and they get after that. Woman body not like that. You may be able to sustain that physical standard if you get to the gym every day, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about living in the dirt where you don't go to the gym and you're picking up sandbags and filling them. A woman's body can't sustain that. I think we all understand that. The question though is that a fair system? Is that a fair system to Marines that are trying to get promoted? That all of a sudden you go back to this separate standard that you need. And here's what I think. The Marine Corps, if you're going to go, we have a standard. It's the male standard. If you're going to go be in a combat arms unit, your standard is now the male standard. You got to do 23 pull-ups to max it. So get after it because that's the standard. There is no gender norm bullshit, right, on the battlefield. You got to physically lead it from the front.
Well, that would go through the whole thing, then. If it's all about equality.
What I'm saying is,
it's all. Let's say it's all about equality.
It's not.
You would have to scrap all standards and go off one set.
For instance, we had a captain by the name of Lawrence Serrano. You should listen to that interview, by the way.
Okay, I'll do that.
Who talked about. Is this push to make women men, forcing women who come into the Marine Corps who want to serve out of the Marine Corps, right? She said, hey, look, I've had babies, right? Now I'm going to go back to work. The physical standards are higher. That means I've got to spend more time in the gym. I'm working on the CG staff now, and I've got two kids. How do I do that? And so are you simply forcing me out of the Marine Corps? And it's an interesting discussion because you don't want me anymore. What you want, okay, is a single woman who goes to the gym all the time so that she can push her physical her body towards being these higher standards, right? But if I have a full-time job, right, and I am a mom, how the hell do I do that? So you're pushing me out of the Marine Corps. So to me, in McNamara's world, look, if you want to go to the combat arms, there's a standard there. You're going to have to meet it, okay, because we're not changing it for you. And the fact that you're a woman, we don't care. We have these standards. Meet them.
Meet them, exceed them,
but you got to lead from the front, okay, because the squad can't wait for you, okay? Because you're allowed to run slower and get 100 points. The squad can't wait for you because you're allowed to be weaker and still get 100 points. We can't have that shit. You've got to be up there doing it, okay? And so...
Then the other aspect is, I remember before I deployed, Jenna Berger, who I think is now the FMF PAC, FMF MARPAC CO out in the Pacific region, he said, they've looked at the standard of women in, I think it was OCS and boot camp, and by far, women have a greater degree of injury. It isn't just a little bit, but it is like a chasm between their male and female counterparts. That's another thing that has to be factored in.
Let me just give you a response from a woman. That's my decision. I don't need you to be my daddy. If I want to do this and I injure my body, then that's my business. That's not yours. Okay.
The way I would counter that is if that's her viewpoint, that is. But what about the squad? What about the platoon? If she's in a key position and she's consistently getting hurt,
then she's gone. Medevacker, she can't do it. She physically can't do it.
On another note, this kind of came up yesterday. I was driving with my brother, doing some issues with my finalizing my brother's finances and everything. My brother's a firefighter. He has a buddy of his who's another firefighter. And he talked to a friend in that same department. He goes, this guy is always out. He's always injured. And what it does, it hurts the squad. It hurts the team when that same person is always out. You can't work together as a team when one key opponent is always gone. And that's like in a squad or a platoon. If that one component is always injured, you're not operating at your optimal level. And we've seen that in sports. How many phenomenal sports athletes, they were just consistently injured, and they just were never able to operate at their optimal level because of their injury.
Right, right. No, and again, impacted. To me, you've got to be physically up to it. And you've got, and again, when you're a leader, you're not doing it from behind. You got to do it from the front. And our political masters have told us the direction this is going to go in. Again, I just think that it's not fair for a sergeant who's got to do 23 pull-ups to max a PFT, right? But in this physical world that we live in, where physical strength is important. Okay. Now, I could make the argument that physical strength not so much important when you're working in a warehouse or you're driving a truck. You know, okay. You know, yeah, it is to a certain extent, but I could understand the two separate physical standards. But when you go play, you bet your life, and you need to physically lead from the front. To me, there should be one standard, and you meet that standard, and that way, and what it does is it protects the majority, the 95%, 98% of females in the Marine Corps that want to come in and serve. You can come in and serve. Here's the standard. You can be competitive for promotion, but if you want to go here, know this. That's not coming to you. You're going to have to go to it, and you're going to have to up your game, not just to meet the MOS standards, but you're going to have to meet the physical standards because you've got to lead them. And so we're not going to allow this separate but equal Jim Crow system in these MOSs where we deem physical prowess to be extremely important. So that's Mac.
No, and that has to be like that. And this is what people need to understand.
It's
because
not.
On the battlefield, the enemy doesn't play gender neutral. You've got to meet that standard. And if you're leading, you've got to lead from the front. That means you've got to be physically fit. I had a colonel when I was went to Afghanistan my second time. He goes, listen, we're an elite organization. I expect everybody to be physically fit. And if you're a staff NCO or officer, you better be leading from the front physically. And
no,
you're absolutely correct.
And Lawrence Serrano's point, the captain I talked to, said, look, I'm an officer in the Marine Corps. And she said, here's the other problem. I was the guy, the Marine Corps, the girl, the Marine Corps advertising to recruit now. I wrestled in high school because somebody told me I couldn't. She said, I got my ass kicked a lot, but I wrestled. She said, but I won too. And I was the captain of our soccer team, you know, where she played soccer. She said, so I was that girl. When I joined the Marine Corps. But guess what? I've changed. I'm married now. I've had kids now. So I know you want me to be that, right? But except for this small segment of women in the Marine Corps that choose to remain single and can live a very, very disciplined life, that I can't do that, and you're forcing me out because I can't do it. Interesting.
That's an interesting take on it.
Right.
And we mentioned this before.
And her point was this. Look, I'm an officer. I'm a leader in the Marine Corps. I don't do a second-class PFT. Okay? I don't do that. But the standards that you've given me, I don't know that I can meet that standard. She said, I did the most pull-ups I've ever done. I want to say she said it was 12. And she said, but that was when I was deployed. They put a pull-up bar in my office so I could practice every day, and I could do 12 pull-ups. I'll tell you what, that's pretty good for a woman.
That is.
That's great. And so, But she said, look, I was deployed. I was in that controlled environment, you know? And so, but can I do that when I'm back here in CONUS with two kids? I don't know that I could spend that kind of time to do that because of...
But she makes a good point. She goes, when I first joined the Marine Corps, I was that person who could do all that. But then when people fail to realize, we don't stay 19 forever. You get older, and she decided, just like the male Marines, to have a family, to have two kids. Can she continually be able to do that high standard that she did when she was 19, where the male Marine doesn't have that problem?
Because of
the physicality that we come with.
And your wife's principally charged with taking care of the kids. Well, we're not.
But even with her two kids, at some point she had to be on light duty at a considerable time for to have those kids.
Oh, no, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And she, you know, I mean, you listen to her, she said, I'm terrified. The interview is funny. Because she talks about, she wrote an article that was published, I want to say in 2014, entitled Why Women Don't Belong in the Infantry. And she said, you know, I wrote it on a flight, blah, 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 blah. And then she entered it into a contest. She won the contest in the Gazette. She's very surprised. And then, you know, so a friend calls her and says, the Gazette publishes the article, and it was in the midst of some gender issue that was ongoing, and then this thing hit. And he calls her and says, hey, do you know that you're trending on Facebook? She says, what? He says, you're trending on Facebook. She says, why? And so it's a funny story. And let me tell you.
Maybe that was the article that I read, that reference, because it was about that time frame.
It might have been. There was a couple written about that issue. I think one of them was written by somebody. There was one previous to her. I think she was involved in female engagement team stuff, and she talked about the degradation of her body.
That was the one I was referring to.
And I don't think that's Lawrence. I think Lawrence is different.
Okay.
But Captain Serrano's is different. But again, her thesis in this article is, am I being forced out of the Marine Corps because of this migration of a very small number of women into the combat arms? Do you still want me? Do you still need me? And she makes a couple interesting. I'll get your thoughts on these. Then we got to take a break. She said one, a sabbatical, if you will, a time out for women as they have kids, that they can either be dropped into the reserve, the inactive, the IRR, if you will, as they go through this kind of period where their kids are between the ages of 0 and 2, and then they would be able to come back on active duty and resume their careers. She said, now that would help me. I'd be interested. My kids could then go to daycare easily, right? And so she said, but I don't think most people understand, like, 06 PT. My daycare doesn't open till 6:30. What do I do? And I said, well, you do what Marines do. They bring their kids to work, right? Somebody's not going out to PT. Could you watch my kid? Yeah. And then you come back. You know, you take your kid, you take them to daycare, blah, blah. I mean, that's how. And I'll tell you, God forbid you're a single mom in the Marine Corps, because it's not easy. How many times did you walk into an office space at where we work, MEP headquarters group, where there is a little baby in a car carrier on the ground? Somebody working.
Yeah.
It happened on a regular basis. Hey, who's this? Oh, this is Joey. Hey, Joey. You got a big nose. But it's not easy, and she brings up some interesting points. Let me take a break. John Ubaldi,
okay.
Tell them where they find the Ubaldi reports.
You can go two places. You can go on the website, just go to ubaldireports.com, or you just go to Facebook and just type in Ubaldi Reports, and you'll find me.
U-B-A-L-D-I. Ubaldi, son of an Italian sailor. All right.
There you go.
There you go. And what was your dad's name?
His name was Anthony.
Yeah, of course. Come on. Would it be crazy?
Of course.
Anthony Ubaldi. More of Allman Radio coming up next on a Wednesday.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Roseanne Cash, granddaughter of, I'm Johnny Cash. China just evidently told the United States and North Korea, hey, let's pump the brakes. Hey, listen up, asshole. Get your dog on a leash. Yeah, and curb that son of a bitch. You've had how many years to make sure this didn't happen? Yeah. So, yeah, us pump the brakes? Anyway, joining me is John Ubaldi. And we've been talking about the gender issues, about actually the commandant was coming on and what would you ask him and what email. Another We Hate Women in the Marine Corps segment. Interesting. When are you guys going to accept women for equals and stop hating on them? I understand some of your concerns, but one standard, the male standard for women in the infantry, doesn't seem very fair to me. I appreciate the program. Even this discussion I find interesting because I do agree that it isn't fair to male Marines to have a separate standard. Is it fair to female Marines to make them meet the male standard? Enjoy the program. Thanks. Is it fair?
Well, the point that I would bring up to her or whoever the comment was from, I'm not sure if it was male or female.
It's female.
This isn't about hate. This isn't about hating on females. Both of us have been in the infantry, both of us have served in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. Combat is the ultimate determination. So if you're talking about equality, there's no equality in combat. Either you make it or you don't. And you can't say, well, I made a mistake, this person wasn't physically qualified or wasn't fit up to the physicality because the physicality dropped because they've been in sustained combat. There's no, it's new, there is no gender neutral. It is what it is. Just like you, before we went to break, when you mentioned, well, maybe when they start to have a family, they can go into the IRR, they can go into reserves, but that won't even work. When I went from the infantry to logistics unit and then back to the infantry, you've got to keep studying this stuff. You've got to keep practicing your craft.
Right.
You can't take a break. It's just like...
Well, no, but if... Here's a scenario that she's painting. She's an intel officer, right? She has kids. Her kids are young. She's constantly being yanked out of her unit to take her kids to the doctor, you know, with other issues relative to her kids. And she doesn't feel like she can be a full-up round Marine. And she doesn't like it because she doesn't want to be a burden. She's supposed to be a leader in that unit. And so when other people are constantly covering for you, that's not a good feeling. And she said, I would rather, you know, take a sabbatical. I'd rather, you know, drop into the reserve or whatnot and then come back when I can be a full-up round interchangeable widget and I can contribute and nobody's having to constantly cover for me. And I think there is merit to that. And then it's her responsibility to stay current, right, if you choose that path.
But see, the other part is, well, you mentioned this earlier. I had a friend of mine who I served with in Afghanistan. She was a single mom. When you talked about PT, she had to get up at 4:30 in the morning. She had to make sure she was there for the physical fitness, drop the kid off at one of the Marines' wives who just watched kids.
Right.
She did her thing. And at one time, her son had strep throat. Well, she couldn't leave him at the daycare
right. Because
you can't be sick. So she took her son to work with them, just like we had mentioned earlier. And it became such a burden on not just on the year, but on her. And eventually counseled, because she had a young child, that it's probably best for you maybe to get out of the Marine Corps, because the Marine Corps is not set up for somebody who is a single parent at that young an age. And we've known people that had to go, oh, I got to go take care of my daughter or my son. I got to take them to the doctor. Well, they're sick. Or I got to stay home. It's just not set up for that.
Right.
I mean, people need to realize, going back to the core mission, what's the mission of the Department of Defense, the military, is to fight and to win the nation's wars.
Right.
Meaning you kill the enemy. We're not set up to be daycare. And when I first came in, we didn't have to deal with these issues. When I was at NHG with you, most of my time was dealing with family issues, and this is male and female.
Yeah.
It just takes away when I'm focusing all my effort on dealing with family issues and helping solve their problems, it becomes a burden on the unit.
And right.
And
that's
the whole round.
So the question when we started was the transgender. And then layer on top of that those issues. And so to me, we eliminate people from military service all the time because you can't be a widget. You can't be a widget. And again, you've heard me talk, and Master Guns and I have sat on them before, but force preservation boards where people, alcoholism, depression, blah, blah, blah. Hey, get them out of the Marine Corps. They can't do this. This is how they cope with stress. We don't have 3 years for them to go through therapy. We're deploying in 90 days. And are they going to be full up route? No. Then get them out of here. Are we going to burden another unit with these people and all their issues? No. Get them out of here.
And that's what happened to us. They took the Marines that had issues and they sent them over to us, and we were deployable just like everybody else. And most of my day and your day was focusing on these issues.
Not mine.
And not going.
Most of yours, but not mine. And I was lucky because I kicked in the Master Guns. And again, his job was to, you know, deal with these guys who had post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injuries. We had guys who were wounded. We had a sergeant.
Vital Marine.
Yeah, we had. Guy, his foot was crushed in by a low detonation IED. So the blasting cap went off, and part of the charge went off, and it kind of turned his foot, all the bones in it. I mean, it broke him into a million pieces. So they're trying to put that back the best they can, you know, so he's taking pain meds, he's doing all this stuff, but it's never going to be, he can't be a Marine anymore. Walks with a cane, yada, yada, yada. And he's in the process of being med boarded out of the Marine Corps. And so you deal with all that and the frustration that they go through, you know, and, you know, the neighbors called the cops over the weekend because Sergeant so-and-so had a few drinks, and then, you know, his wife and he got in an argument, and he raised his voice. The neighbors got scared. They called the cops, blah, 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 blah. And so it goes. So the problem, the sad reality is you can't take all those people with you. And so
no, you can't.
So you have to. But it's hard. And so, again, another interesting article. What are you writing about? There's not like there's a shortage of things to write about these days.
This week I had to take a break from writing because I was taking care of my financial issues.
Right.
Well, not my finance, my brother's financial issues and stuff. But next week I was thinking of writing about this whole Russia collusion with the election, because the image that went out was the DNC was hacked by Russia. Well, no one has seen the servers to purport that that was the claim. And now there's reports coming out that instead of the Russians hacking, it was an inside job from someone in the DNC that released all this information.
Yeah, that's been out there. That's a conspiracy that's been floated along with what there was a DNC staffer that was murdered.
The point is, you're correct. It's been floated, but nobody has debunked the fact that if the DNC was potentially hacked by Russia, there was a company outside of Irvine called CrowdStrike, said, yeah, we got reports. Looks like Russia did this. But no one has seen that report, and nobody has seen the servers. Now, one federal investigator has seen the DNC server to report that claim, but that's what we've been told. We've been told by the DNC and elements that Russia did this. Okay, let's see the servers to see did Russia actually hack into the DNC server?
Oh, so you want to see the DNC server and you think that's going to happen?
That's not going to happen.
Thank
you know
you.
That's not going to happen.
All right. So now that we've established that you're not drunk this morning.
No, I'm not drunk this morning. But these are things that just keeps pushing off. So that's probably that. There's always the North Korea issue, and God knows what's domestically between tax reform, health care, and all the other issues. So there's not a shortage of things to write about.
No. It's very, 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 very true. All right. When do you go back to Florida?
I go back tonight, or I leave this afternoon at 2:40, and I get into Tampa by 10:50.
All right.
Straight through from SFO to Tampa.
Nice. Well, first of all, on behalf of everybody who listens, I'm sure who's got to know you through your appearances here, our thoughts and prayers go out to your family, hope that everybody's doing good and travel safe, master guns, and wish you all the best in terms of dealing with. Not the loss of your brother, certainly at such a young age, and then everything that you have to deal with on the backside of that. So,
I appreciate that, but I remember when we were at MHG, you told me about the situation that happened with your sister and the things that you had to deal with regarding that.
Yeah.
That was very traumatic, what your sister went through. So,
for people that have never heard, my sister's husband shot their 4-year-old and 6-year-old in the head and then killed himself after she said that she was leaving him. And that happened in 1996, in September of 1996. Of all the things I've ever seen, it's the single most horrific thing I've ever seen in my life. And of all the things I've ever been around, brutal things in Iraq and Afghanistan, none of us has had to witness our children being murdered. And my sister is the toughest person that I know. And, it goes back to what I tell my kids. Life's not for pussies, man. You gotta be tough.
Exactly.
You gotta be tough. And life won't kick you in the stomach once. It'll kick you in the stomach 6 or 7 times. But if you get up the 8th time, you win. So you gotta get up and you gotta be tough. And so, anyway, but it sucks to be tough. It sucks to be tough. But, again, it's one of the things that you have to teach your kids. And kids who don't learn it because their parents, and the way you teach kids is you let them fail. You let them fail. And then you teach them and you show them how to come back from adversity. So just get up off the mat. Get up off the mat. Get up off the mat. Get up off the mat.
But that's where you learn the most is through failure. Right. I mean, my favorite president of all time was Abraham Lincoln. The guy failed at everything he touched except that one thing. He succeeded when he became president of the United States. He just kept bumping along, and all those experiences he went through factored into him being president of the United States.
Right. Right. No, I mean, we don't really value that. We say we do. But everybody's feelings really matter, and you have the term is helicopter parents. That
helicopter parents.
Yeah, there's a kid that's suing his coach. I saw the headline yesterday, and he didn't play him, and he said it caused him irreparable psychological damage because his coach didn't play him. Yeah, it's like crazy stuff. So, I tell the story. My dad never got to see me play because he was always off doing baseball. And, so he's watching me play basketball. I come home after the game and he says, and I was pissed at my coach, and I was a decent basketball player. I was a shooting guard and whatnot. And I said, I should have played more, blah, blah. He said, you want to play more? And I said, yeah. Now, here's my dad. He's a professional athlete. He's a manager, blah, blah, blah. What's he going to say? And he looks at me and goes, play better. I said, what? I said, what are you talking about? What happened to my coach is an idiot or blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, he's not an idiot. He wants to win. The reason he's not playing you is is because he thinks he has a better chance to win with other people. So you have to convince him, and you'll do that by the way you play.
Exactly.
All right, Dad. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. And so, but you know what? It's, my younger son, Patrick, who's in 3-5, he's on his 6th platoon sergeant in 15 months.
Wow.
And, he's been in the fleet for 15 months. Right, so he's a brand new second lieutenant. He's a first lieutenant now, but brand new second lieutenant. You come, and when you don't have any experience and you're a knowledge, and you're a novice, right, as a leader, where do you get that experience and savvy? Who gives that to you?
It's a platoon sergeant.
Your platoon sergeant. All right, not so much in his case, you know. But again, if you don't have that toughness in you, that you keep getting up, that doesn't work out good. Got to be tough, man. Got to be tough. So,
got to.
Anyway. All right, Ubaldi, tough guy. Son of Anthony. Travel safe. We will talk to you. Good luck with the column. We'll keep an eye on it. Tell everybody where to find your work again.
Hey, go to UbaldiReports.com or go on Facebook at Ubaldi Reports and you'll find me.
There you have it. The one and only, John Ubaldi.
You got it.
All right, have a good one. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
You bet. We're going to take a quick break. We'll go through some news headlines next. Phil Smith joins us at the top of the hour. We're going to talk Civil War history. How do you teach it? How do you take the country, a nation that lives by 140 characters, to study something that's not easy, that's something that's complex? It would certainly be to their benefit, but do they really want to... Do they really want to walk through? And I read a little while ago, I got an interesting letter about the Horace Greeley letter I read. Mac, you just read the letter that Lincoln wrote to Greeley. I, like the other listener, had never heard that in its entirety. I find it interesting he distinguishes his personal beliefs from what he believes his job is as the president. I think that letter ought to be made more public, because it certainly helps you appreciate the troubled times in which Lincoln presided over. And his primary purpose of maintaining the Union, which was an unsettled question at that point. Thanks for sharing that. I since downloaded it and now have it on my desktop. Appreciate the program. I think it's awesome that General Allen will come back on and talk about the Marshall Plan. I, too, would be interested in hearing about that. I, too, am skeptical because of the economic factor. Where do we get the money? I know you're going to say from our allies. Everybody's got to be in on this, because we all stand to benefit. I'll be simply interested to hear what he has to say. We're going to take a break. Phil Smith coming up in 13 minutes. News headlines in about 4. Don't touch that dial. We continue. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I crushed Toby Keith.
Never tied a knot. God wasn't in it. He stole his kiss as he rode away. He never hung his hat up at Kitty's place. I should have been a cowboy. should have learned to roll around. Wearing my six shooter, riding my pony on the cattle drive. Stealing a young girl's heart, just like Gene and Roy, singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy.
Heather Heyer's mom is speaking right now at a memorial service in Charlottesville. She's dead. Heather Heyer is. For no good reason at all. Because two groups of idiots wanted to fight, and it's just disgusting. That, and let me tell you, the more I look at this, what were the police doing there, man? I mean, yeah, look at how those guys, look at it, what they're wearing when they're fighting. It's stupid. So, pretty frustrating, to say the least. And that, you know, her poor family has to live with that. So, obviously, thoughts and prayers to go out to her family and what they're dealing with. It's just, again, what went on Saturday was a group of idiots who had a permit to protest, another group of idiots that moves around the country to disrupt things that they don't like. And so, the police are charged, one, protecting people's First Amendment right. Again, I know it's hateful, but who cares? They would have assembled, talked their stupid nonsense, and gone away. Did it have to turn into this idiotic stuff? No, it didn't. So, anyway, Mac, do you have a list of the presidents that own slaves? I do. Washington, Jefferson, Adams did not. Madison, Monroe, Andrew Jackson, Martin Van Buren, William Henry Harrison, John Tyler, James Polk, Zachary Taylor, Andrew Johnson, and Ulysses S. Grant. Okay. George Washington was a major slaveholder before, during, and after his presidency. His will freed his slaves pending the death of his widow, though she freed his slaves within a year after his death. Jefferson was a major slaveholder but opposed the institution throughout his life and promoted legislation to free slaves. Because of overwhelming debt, he only freed a few of his slaves in his will. Most historians believe Jefferson fathered multiple children with his slave Sally Hemings, the half-sister of the late wife, Martha Wales Skelton. Yeah, Jefferson. James Madison proposed the three-fifths compromise, which counted slaves as three-fifths of a person for the purpose of taxation and legislative representation. He did not free his slaves in his will. Why free him in your will? Free him while you're alive. James Monroe. Monroe was critical of slavery despite owning slaves himself. He supported sending freed slaves to the new country of Liberia. Its capital, Monrovia, is named after him. Did not know that. Monrovia named after James Monroe because he wanted freed slaves sent to Monrovia. Wow. Andrew Jackson. Jackson owned many slaves and faced several controversies related to slavery during his presidency. During his campaign for the presidency, he faced criticism for being a slave trader. He did not free his slaves in his will. Martin Van Buren. Van Buren's father owned six slaves. The only slave he personally owned, Tom, escaped in 1814. When Tom was found in Massachusetts, Van Buren tentatively agreed to sell him to the finder, but terms were not agreed, and Tom remained free. Later in life, Van Buren belonged to the Free Soil Party, which opposed the expansion of slavery into the Western territories, without advocating for abolitionism outright. William Henry Harrison. Harrison inherited several slaves. As the first governor of the Indiana Territory, he successfully lobbied Congress to legalize slavery in Indiana. President Jefferson opposed these efforts despite being himself a slave owner. John Tyler considered slavery evil, but he never freed any of his slaves and consistently supported slavery and its expansion during his time in political office. There's an interesting little cocktail. James Polk became the Democratic nominee for president in 1844, partially because of his tolerance of slavery. In contrast to Van Buren, he generally supported slavery as a president. His will provided for the freeing of his slaves after the death of his wife. Though the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution ended up freeing them long before her death in 1891, Zachary Taylor owned slaves throughout his life. He generally resisted attempts to expand slavery in the territories after his death. There were rumors that slavery advocates had poisoned him. Tests of his body over 100 years later have been inconclusive. Andrew Johnson. Johnson owned a few slaves and was supportive of James Polk's slavery policies. As military governor of Tennessee, he convinced Abraham Lincoln to exempt the area from the Emancipation Proclamation. Good God. Ulysses S. Grant. There's the surprise. Although he later served as general in the Union Army, Grant had control of slaves owned by his wife. He is known to have personally owned only one slave, William Jones, from 1857 to 1859. Grant freed Jones rather than sell him, despite the financial need. During the Civil War, he enlisted displaced slaves into the Union war effort and had them paid for their service. So we got issues, man. We have issues as a nation. Do you want to take a real look at it? A Washington, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe. Okay, so of 18 presidents, let's see, 2, 6 of 18, 12 of 18 owned slaves. 12 of the first 18 presidents owned slaves. We got issues. We need to talk about. And people need to understand these men, these women, in their time. So we'll talk to Phil Smith about that. So we'll take a break. Armory Radio continues here on a Wednesday morning. John Allen will join us probably Friday. No, he'll join us on Thursday. I'm sorry. So you'll hear from him on Thursday. So always an interesting interview. And then we'll hear the Commandant next week. So with that said, we'll take a quick break. More of this program coming up next.